Hello, and welcome to this podcast from Consider This. Please let me know what you think and tell others about us on social media. This podcast was originally broadcast live on Northumberland 89.7 FM. You can hear this show live every Friday at noon. Thank you for downloading this program, and I hope you enjoy it. Hello, I'm Robert Washburn, and welcome to Consider This Northumberland, a current affairs program dedicated to the issues facing our community. We talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life in Northumberland County. So I'm asking you, the listener, to take some time out of your busy day to consider this. Murray Sinclair was a well-known lawyer, judge, member of the Senate, and a dedicated advocate for Indigenous people and Canadians. He is best recognized as the chair of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission into the legacy of the residential schools. The 94 calls to action continue to be the centerpiece in healing the divide between Indigenous people and the rest of Canadians. This interview with Alderville First Nations Chief Tainar Simpson is insightful on several levels. Simpson reflects on Sinclair's impact on the Alderville community and gives some personal reflections based on his own time working with the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. Have a listen. I'm so pleased to have with me today Alderville First Nations Chief Tainar Simpson. Welcome back.
Thank you for having me, Robert.
Many people might recognize the name, but how would you introduce Murray Sinclair to someone?
Well, to call Murray Sinclair a trailblazer would be to not be doing a service to Murray. Everywhere Murray went, he was, it's been said before, he was the first to do things everywhere he went. He was the first Indigenous judge in Manitoba, only the second Indigenous judge in all of Canada. He trailblazed everywhere. He was a scholar, an athlete. Someone that it's impossible to define, and the significance of what Murray has done for First Nations, Métis, and really all people in Canada is just, we can't underestimate and understate how much he contributed to Canada and its well-being.
Can you tell us about his life? Maybe start with his childhood.
Well, I know that he was raised by his mother, and he eventually was raised by his grandparents. So he was someone that maybe didn't come from like a very steady home, but when his grandparents took him over, I understand that things went pretty good for him. But he had a similar perhaps upbringing to a lot of the First Nations in Canada, where we weren't raised necessarily in a like traditional nuclear style family that maybe people of European descent are more used to. Indigenous people, we really are like an extended family. Our aunts and uncles, grandparents, sisters, cousins, they all take a role in raising of family members. So I think Murray's sort of fits in that category as well.
Now, I understand growing up, he was quite a good student.
Yes, apparently he was the valedictorian at his school, which, I know you don't get to that point if you're not academically strength-based, but also you need to be socially strength-based to win valedictorian. So it looks like he just got accolades from all around. And again, like he was always reminding people that he was the athlete of the year as well, too, at his school.
Do we know why he wanted to become a lawyer?
Well, that's a good question. I think that originally he was not going to school to be a lawyer, but it ended up happening that way, where he became an executive assistant to someone in politics that I think that probably opened his eyes to the bigger picture of what was happening in Canada. And I think that Murray's mind being the way it was, he probably thought that he could best serve in that capacity as a lawyer. He was able to see where there were injustices in the system, and he probably wanted to fight those injustices because we know he did, and he fought many injustices in his day.
You've already alluded to something that I wanted to explore with you, and that was what kind of a lawyer was he? What kind of cases did he take on?
Well, he was specializing in indigenous and I think a lot of areas that are indigenous related. So he wasn't in say family law or wills and estates. He was in the areas of law that could specifically help indigenous folks in Canada.
Now, he was called to the bar in 1980, and then a mere 8 years later, he became an associate chief judge. What does that tell us about his abilities?
Well, it means that he would have impressed a lot of people along the way. And so to be from 8 years to being called to the bar to becoming the second Indigenous judge in Canada, that's a miracle. It's incredible. And people, he did have some naysayers at the time. He tells a story of how when he was first, like in the cafeteria, hanging out with all the other judges. And one judge said to him, he's like, "You know, you're only here because you're Indigenous, right? And we all feel sorry for you." And then Murray's response was, "You know, you're only here because you're white." So that's the kind of man that Murray was.
Murray Sinclair was a lifelong advocate for Indigenous rights. He was part of a commission that identified the disproportionate number of Indigenous people who ended up in the criminal justice system. What impact did this have on Indigenous people?
I think you're referring to the Aboriginal Justice Inquiry in Manitoba, which was a landmark inquiry at the time, and the repercussions from that inquiry were nationwide. So he had brought to the forefront how Indigenous people were discriminated against at every single level of the judicial process, from being stopped by police officers when, you know, if you weren't Indigenous, the police officer might have let you go or let you off without a warning or with a warning. And then just getting into, you know, when you're triaged at the station, getting the charges laid, and then, you know, getting the maximum sentences. So every step along the way in that justice system, it was determined that Indigenous people were discriminated against. So people went from, you know, maybe a very minor offense to spending 20 years in jail just because of that discrimination level. So whereas like non-Indigenous people might not have even entered into the justice system for whatever infraction it was, Indigenous people were compounded with discrimination to the fullest extent of the law, to the point where 40% of all inmates in Canada were Indigenous.
It wasn't just his work as a lawyer and as a judge and as a commissioner that he distinguished himself. He did a lot of other things as well.
Oh, absolutely. So even before he was in part of the TRC, he took on discrimination in the Thunder Bay policing. That might have actually been after TRC. I can't remember the exact dates, but he took a critical role in identifying the discrimination that was happening at the Thunder Bay policing, and I think we've all heard about it in the news what happened there. So, these are the kinds of things that he not did on the side, but just things that he was always doing. He was the chancellor at Queen's University, and he was also an air cadet, and he always supported the cadets. So, like, he had a lot of interests. So it's really hard to pigeonhole him and say, "Oh, this is how you can define Murray." You just can't define him because he did so many different things.
In 2009, Murray Sinclair was appointed Chief Commissioner of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. Why do you think he was a good person to lead this commission?
Well, I think it's because of his knowledge, understanding, his capacity to be fair, the honor and respect that Indigenous people in Canada had from at the time. And he was originally asked to be the commissioner when the TRC was founding, and he actually turned it down. And Justice Laforme had taken it over. So at that time, there were some problems with the TRC, and all of the commissioners resigned, and they reformed with a new commission. And at that time, Murray Sinclair accepted the role of chief commissioner. So that's when he came in. And I think that we know the rest is history, but his understanding of the law, his ability to reach out to people, and we know that he listened to 6,000 survivors' stories during his years at the TRC.
The changes that he made when he came in and almost had to restart the process, could you describe for us the impact that this had on the commission and its work?
Well, I think the TRC wasn't well defined in the first days. A lot of people were thinking, is this another Royal Commission on Aboriginal People, which we know was a very important seminal commission that happened in Canada. It was the longest and most expensive commission, but it also, in my mind, was the most accomplished and accepted one. So when you were looking at the TRC, they wanted to make sure they got it right, but they were also thinking, we don't want it to last forever. But you can't put a timeline on a TRC like that. So I think in the early days, the TRC was kind of waffling and wasn't sure of their mandate and how they're going to move forward. And then when Murray came in, he gave that credibility to the commission. He didn't pull any punches. He's like, this is going to take a long time. We're going to get to the bottom of this. We're going to collect all of our evidence, and we're not going to take shortcuts or rush anything where we don't need to. So he brought that formalization and integrity to the commission.
You mentioned the number of people who gave depositions at the commission. And I know that you've personally experienced listening to people tell their stories of residential schools and other harms that happened to Indigenous people. How is it that he could possibly listen to that much, and how must it impacted him? Can you give us some insight?
Well, he originally turned down the role of chief commissioner for that exact reason, where he thought it was going to be too hard, unbearable to hear all those stories. But when you're in this line of work, you realize it has to be done and someone has to do it. And are you the right person to do it? If you don't think you are, then you're not. You have to be prepared for this. You have to know that it's going to be an unlimited well of sorrow that you're going to have to go through and listen to. But know that every single person's story is important, and you can't be tired and say, what's the end of the day? Let's wrap this up. You have to give your utmost respect and time to every single survivor who has their story to tell.
You worked with the commission. Did you ever get a chance to meet him?
No, it's funny how in a lot of different areas we were tied together. We worked in a lot of the same areas, including working on Queen's University advisory on Indigenous issues up until just earlier this year. But it's crazy. We never actually met in person, even though we had so much in common over the last 2 decades, 2.5 decades.
Well, it sounds like you were in the same room. What was your impressions of him when you saw him?
He was very confident but open, and he actually reminds me a lot of my father because they even look a lot alike. They have similarities in their style and how they move. So I instantly had a great affinity for him, and I just I maybe I projected a lot of positivity and on him, but of course it was all well deserved. So I immediately liked him, and I'm pretty sure everyone who ever met him immediately liked him as well too.
Education was a cornerstone of his approach to advancing Indigenous rights. I mean, you look and you see that he often spoke about the path forward being centered on teaching, whether it was children at school or adults or the role of media to educate people about Indigenous issues and history. Can you elaborate on this significance of education as a theme?
Well, I think Murray must have recognized that it's very difficult to change people's minds once they have developed their ideas in life. And the way to address this is through the education system. So people, students, learners sitting in their classrooms ready with an open mind to learn something. I think Murray Sinclair recognized that that's the best time to reach people. So we might not convince people that aren't in the education system about new ways of thinking, but this is the time to get them. And these generational changes and understanding of the issues is the approach that he took. So this is why reconciliation is a long-term process. You have some people that will never change their opinion about Indigenous people. Some might hold racist views that you're never going to get them to shake. So we need to basically focus on the next generation or anyone with an open mind who wants to learn these issues. And I should also note that Murray Sinclair had 20 honorary degrees from universities. This is how much he was respected by the educational institutions of this country and beyond.
How is Sinclair viewed within the Indigenous community?
I would say since the late 80s, if you were paying attention to what was going on in the Indigenous world, you would have known his name. He would have come up. There were a lot of big movers and shakers in the 80s and 90s. So he was definitely among those names that people that were making a really good change for Indigenous people in Canada. But of course, his legend just kept on growing. He didn't stop. So he went from like someone who was a mover and a shaker in the 80s and 90s to the level that he eventually achieved to the point where he really doesn't have any peers in the world of Indigenous people in Canada because his accomplishments are just so great.
What is something you think non-Indigenous Canadians should know about him that they may not already know?
Well, he didn't fight just for First Nations. He was fighting for Canada. He was fighting for a fair and just Canada where discrimination against Indigenous people is bad, but discrimination against anyone is bad. He wanted a Canada where people would be treated fairly based on the merits of who they are, and not to discriminate against people just because of maybe their socioeconomic standing or the color of their skin or their gender. So he really was the epitome of someone who represented and fought for a fair and just nation.
What will be his lasting impact on you?
Well, I really wish that we had sat down for a coffee and just chatted a bit. I would have learned so much from him. He probably wouldn't have learned as much from me, but I would have learned a lot from him. So again, that would have been a selfish thing to want to take up his time for that. But he sets a bar high. So if you want to know what it takes to accomplish great things, I think use Murray Sinclair as an example. How he was someone that was beyond reproach. I'm sure he had his detractors, but I don't even know any. Everyone just seemed to universally adore him. But you wouldn't be able to detract from him because he was such a man of high standing and honor that any attacks against his character would fall flat.
What do you think his lasting impact will be on Alderville?
Well, I think that he gives a role model to our youth. He's someone that everyone around here was really sad and upset when he passed. We knew he was in ill health, but of course, you never really think it's going to happen. He was fairly young. 73 years old is young these days, so I think it was a big shock. We weren't ready. If I think it's something that we would have loved to have honored him if we knew that we had limited time with him. We would have definitely invited him to the community, rolled out the red carpet, have him speak, give him gifts and honors. You never know how long you're going to be on this planet for. So I think all of Alderville's behind him, all First Nations in Canada are behind him, and it was just a really sad moment when we heard of his passing.
Thank you for talking to me today about Murray Sinclair.
Thank you.
That was Alderville First Nations Chief Tainar Simpson. I want to thank my guests this week for talking to me, and I want to thank all the listeners for tuning in today. Please join me again next week when we will talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life and Northumberland County. So please tune in. If you would like to listen or share this or any podcast, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. There you will find past podcasts, news, and other information about life and politics in Northumberland County. Or you can go to the radio station's website at northumberland897.ca. I'm Robert Washburn. Thanks for taking time out of your day to listen in, and I hope over the week you will continue to consider this. Thank you for listening to this podcast from Consider This. If you have any comments or would like to suggest a story, please contact me at considerthisnorthumberland@gmail.com, or you can message me on Facebook at Consider This. If you enjoyed this podcast or are looking for more news and information about Northumberland County, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. That's consider-this.ca. And don't forget to share. And again, thank you for listening and stay tuned for more from Consider This.